Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Frank Benali.
This is Klaus Lundekvam.
I'm Matt Letitia.
Dean Hammond here.
And you're listening to In That Number.
Here is Letitia in the standing. There's the reply. Barry and Pahars. History made.
It's James Beattie. Oh, Belter.
Barry for the hat trick.
Lifts it, and he's got it in as well! And Danny Ings has done it again!
Thanks for checking out In That Number with me, Kevin the Moscow Mush Milverton. Find me on Twitter at Moscow Mush.
And me, Ray Hunt. You can find me on at RayHunt84.
Follow the show on at Number Podcast on Twitter.
And on Facebook, Instagram and Telegram on In That Number Podcast.
Email us with your thoughts and feelings on InThatNumberPodcast@gmail.com.
And if you like what you hear, consider showing your support by visiting buymeacoffee.com/InThatNumber.
Let's march on in.
Welcome back to In That Number. This is episode 197, proud to be part of the Sports Social Network. Today, we have the fourth instalment of our Fancast series, where we get to chat to the fans on our Discord, a chance for you to be heard. This time, we have Tim Brucker coming to us all the way from across the pond in Pennsylvania. And along with Tim, we have our Tim, T. Bizzle, Tim Bizance, also from across the pond. But firstly, let's get in T-Biz and check in with him, because I haven't spoken to you for a while. It's been quite a few weeks. I think the first chance we've had to catch up since the end of last season. So how are you doing, Tim?
Oh, not too bad. Got a little cold. So if you're hearing me on there and it seems a little coughy or a little nasally, I apologize. Besides that, things are trickling in. Really just enjoying the beautiful weather here in Chicago and taking it easy. Hit the beach up, so Lake Michigan, which is fantastic. If you have had the opportunity, please go. Besides that, just excited. It's good to hear your voice as well, Ray.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, let's not leave our guest waiting any longer. We have Tim Brucker. Tim, welcome along to the show. You were lucky enough to actually visit Southampton earlier in the year, and we met up and had a few drinks together and watched the Leicester game, I believe, didn't we?
Yes, it was. It was a great game. One of the few.
Yeah. Well, we only won two games at home last season. You picked one of them, so yeah.
Yeah, that was my strategy. It was a bit of a nerve-wracking game, but what a great time I had. It was amazing.
Yeah, I just want to say as well, because I set out when you guys said that you were coming over, because you brought your wife over as well, didn't you? And I was planning to meet you up, and I was going to supply you with drinks and you know, take you to the stadium and stuff and that, just have a good time. But you wouldn't let me buy you a drink. I think everything, I don't think I even spent any money. I think every drink I had was bought by you. So it was amazing.
It's in lieu of the coffee donations that you guys are always talking about here on the pod. So no, I mean, my wife had done some student teaching in England when she was in college.
That's right.
And
I remember
so
that.
For her, it was a chance to come back. It was my first visit to England. And I really wanted to get there while they were still playing in the Premier League. And I got in under the wire. But yeah, we had such an amazing time. Once as we were planning the trip, you know, I kind of had the game picked out. It was over what we call spring break here, which is basically you get a week off. My wife's a school teacher, so she was, had a week off from school, and so just worked perfectly to get in there, see Leicester, who I proper hate, as you would say in England, for many reasons. And we had such a great time. You were so gracious to give me some hotspots to go to, tell me where to stay. I think
of course
we
I was
Red
gracious.
Line.
You were supplying me with beer. Of course I was. Yeah, the Red Lion.
That does help. But yeah, we had an amazing time. You know, we went to a couple pubs before the game, went to the fan zone, met our friend Kevin McGee.
That's right.
And just had a great time. We walked, we stayed at a local hotel, so we were close enough to walk. And we just had, an amazing time. My wife is not necessarily a Premier League fan or anything, but by halftime she was. And we just, it was just such a great experience. We are locally fans of the Philadelphia Union, which is a MLS team here in Philadelphia, obviously. But take that times 10 in terms of the experience. And it was just awesome. And the fact that they won was definitely good fortune for us, especially, with the way the season went.
Yeah, and I think I joked at the time saying that I think, I said we were going to win. I said, because you guys were here. And I said that you were, and afterwards I was just like, yeah, good luck, charm. And I believe a lot of people said the same thing to you.
Yeah, we were surrounded, obviously, but we were kind of in block six, so kind of midfield. And there was, I think, a lot of people there that are typically in those same seats. And they kind of picked up that we were American and, it was our first visit. And by the end of the game, they're like, you have to come back next week. I don't think I can do that. But I wish I could have. If I could have saved the season, I probably should have.
Yeah, maybe you should just live over here from August to May and then go back to the States
Don't give my wife any ideas. She would definitely be all about that.
Yeah, so I'd want to know, people from the States especially, like, where their fandom of Saints comes from. Because, I mean, you've got your whole – you could have a pick of anyone in the Premier League, can't you? I imagine you must have an influx of Man City and Liverpool fans over the last few years. And so why on earth would you pick a team like Southampton?
So it's actually a pretty good story. There's a friend of mine who lives locally. He's a professor at the university, or at least was. He's retired now. But his name's Simon Hooper. Not the crappy referee, but actually a great guy. And we used to go out for this beer club thing where you would sit and have a tasting of different beers. And I played soccer growing up. And I think at that time, NBC had maybe just picked up the contract and I was seeing more games on TV, but I was explaining to him that I liked to watch, but I didn't have any fandom and or any rooting interest, but I needed a team to follow. And so I told him I'm not a top six guy. I root for Philadelphia sports teams. We don't often win things. And so I explained, I'm not trying to be a bandwagon guy. I can't be a Man U fan, and so I kind of walked him through some things, and Simon knew enough about, where I was from, Philadelphia and the Premier League to say at that time, this was 2013 or 2014. And as we talked it through, he's like, the team that you should really follow is Southampton. They have, they're noted for a great academy. They bring a lot of players up. At that time, we were finishing in the top 10. And he's like, I think you would be Southampton is the right kind of town for you. It's a port city, kind of like Philadelphia. And long story short, he's like, just go home this weekend, watch them play and, we'll go from there. And it was the weekend that they beat Sunderland 8-0. So I watched my first game of Southampton and they're just scoring left and right, which of course I knew would not be forever, but I was just like, okay, I'm hooked. And that team was really, really good.
For the next 2 or 3 years. You're just a good luck charm. That's what it is.
Maybe.
The first game you watched, they won 8-0. The first game you actually saw live, they win.
I don't think they've scored 8 goals since. So that's kind of how it came about. And I've just, as each season has gone on, I've just become more invested in it. The only other team that I'm a fan of that I think bothers me more when they lose is probably the Eagles in the NFL. But it just, I'm there for every game. As Tim Bazance knows, in America, you can see all the Premier League games for a relatively cheap price on the Peacock app, and I never miss a game. catch every single one I can. So I just have been a big fan. It's been very frustrating the last couple of years, obviously, but I'm not going anywhere. And I'm actually kind of excited about the championship because I'm so tired of losing games. Maybe we'll
hold that thought.
Yeah,
I haven't started, so yeah, you never know. But yeah, I don't know how the championship's going to be easily accessible for you guys over there. Have you looked into that?
It's called Sailing the High Seas, and in doing that, I will be the biggest pirate that I can possibly imagine. So I will do whatever it can. Now there's I know there's iPlayer. I can VPN into a UK, you know, to UK streams if there's based on that. I know the team might be able to have it. That's probably the biggest concern of anybody that I've talked to over here about watching championship games is that ESPN Plus shows between 3 and 5 a week, which is good. But I think there's going to be a higher probable chance that we would have the ability to watch them because Southampton is a bigger draw. But it's really, it's, you know, it's going to be, there will be a struggle each week to be able to, and you won't know going into the game ahead of time if you're going to be able to see it. But we'll be able to figure it out. And that's,
yeah, that's a shame. But yeah. I think the only one that you can be certain of, surely, has got to be that opening day, the Friday night. You must be able to get someone for that because I imagine it's going to be picked up over here on Sky. So if there are going to be some live games, you're going to be able to get hold of that one at least.
Yeah, I figured as much.
Okay, well, before we get into the show with some ITN news, I just want to say, if you're enjoying the show, then please show your support by heading to buymeacoffee.com/inthatnumber. Any donation would be greatly appreciated. Right, let's get cracking with some news then. Tim, again, this is a great time for you to be coming on because we have this Russell Martin news now. It's finally happened that the 37-year-old, 37, he's younger than me, for Christ's sake. He signed a deal.
He's way younger than me.
This has never happened before, though. It's like it's right at that edge now, where all these managers coming in are going to start becoming younger than me, and it's just sad. But yeah, so he signed a deal until 2026. He of course joins from fellow Championship side Swansea, where he spent the last 2 years. I just want to say what Henrik Kraft had to say. He said Russell was the standout candidate throughout our recruitment process. And we are confident his strong track record alongside the experienced leadership of our new director of football, Jason Wilcox, will deliver great results. And Jason Wilcox has added, Russell has shown fantastic qualities in his managerial career so far and is someone who we believe will thrive in a great environment we have here at Southampton. He is a fantastic fit for us and what we are trying to achieve. With a strong record of developing and nurturing young talented players to fulfil their potential and deliver results on the pitch. We can't wait for Russell to get started working with the team at Staplewood as we get ready for the new season. So, yeah, Tim, we've had a lot of time to come to terms with this appointment because it's, you know, it's been held up with disagreements over compensation, etc. But he's here. You know, he can begin. And I guess how are you feeling about this now that it's finally over the line?
Generally a positive feeling. Like I had never heard of Ralph Hasenhüttl until we hired him. And I'd never heard of Russell Martin either. I did watch the masterclass video on YouTube, and it seems like he has a way he likes to play, and it seems like he can communicate well with players, at least based on kind of what you see there. Definitely a better feeling, you know, after watching a little bit of the press conference and everything else than with, you know, the previous appointee. I think he'll be really good. I think he's a proven championship manager at this point. You know, obviously, you know, I think Swansea finished in 10th place, which again, you know, isn't near the top of the league, but I think he's done a good job there. And I just want to be positive about it. So I think we're going to need patience, sure. You know, especially in the early part of the season. But in general, I like the idea that he's young. I think he has an idea of how he wants to play. I'm generally positive about the direction they're heading in, at least with him.
That's good. I mean, but I will just things don't stay positive here for too long, but I wonder, I mean, if Russell Martin was given the job when Ralph was sacked, would fans have been okay with that then? I don't know. I think now that we're in the Championship, fans are more willing to accept a Championship level manager, which is not to say not Premier League quality, but you know, we just don't know. But with the Nathan Jones thing, I think it took about a week for everyone to realise that he wasn't the man for the job. I think what you said, we need to give him a little bit of time, and he has done a good job at Swansea with what he's what he's had.
Yeah, and I think it's, I mean, it's kind of pie in the sky to think we were going to hire someone that, you know, a big name manager that is going to manage in the championship leagues with hopes of moving up. You know, once you're not a Premier League team anymore, I think it's harder to draw. And I mean, even the Premier League, where we're going to get a big name, you know, I think getting, you know, getting a hold of a guy who's relatively young, who can grow with the club, I think is, you know, in idea, I think it's exactly where we should be. Just, you know, we just have to hope he's the guy.
Yeah, God, we need it, don't we? After the last two appointments, we definitely need it. And T-Biz, I haven't actually spoke to you about the appointments. I don't know how you were feeling. And when we had our last guest on, Stu Minchin, last week, during the week, we briefly went into his style of play and his formations, etc. But have you been doing some digging on this for us? Can you tell us how he prefers to set up? Because, I mean, the last couple of games for Swansea, it looked like he was playing a flat back four with a variation of five midfield, whether it be two holding and then three roaming, or whether it's just like a 1-4-1 up top. But yeah, how have you seen it?
Yeah, so he has some malleability and flexibility, like you did mention, but it was really kind of it was funny because the first person whenever I heard the name Russell Martin, I thought of the LA Dodgers catcher.
Yeah.
So in my head, and then all of a sudden I started looking up on this guy, and I'm like, well, okay. So I think we've decided to hire the prettiest manager since Pochettino to be able to come back in, which is nice. You know, you have to have a full beard. But beyond that, like you said, he's 37 years old. And he's from Brighton. And he's born and raised in Brighton. So he's
Scotland, though.
Yeah, he is from. So he's familiar with the South Coast, and through his playing career, he had a different background, primarily specifically at Norwich,
at Norwich, yeah.
Yeah, so he bounced around with them between the Championship and in the Premier League, but really started looking at and becoming a manager the second that he, working on his coaching badges the second that he basically got to become a professional. He had it completely in his mindset since he was 22 is when he started attending and getting those badges. So he's been working on and trying to be a coach leading up to it now for the last 15 years. So to me, it's not like he's just a player that wanted to go out and just like, oh, I think I can continue on and be a coach. I think he knew going into all of this, that's what he loves and he's passionate about. So which is really cool to hear and see that he breathes and wants to be a manager all at the same time. So the emphasis that he's got is going to be passing, possession, and pressing. So the differentiate between with Ralph, where the gegenpress and was basically the entire idea was once we are without the ball, to get the ball as quickly as we can. Russell is a little bit more proactive rather than reactive, where his intention is to try and maintain and look at possession. And so you see some of the gripes and people talking about it where his style of play isn't successful, or, you know, it's not going to be the best, because all you're going to do is you're going to pass the ball 100 times and then you're going to give it up and it's not going to make any progression. Well, understandably, that's based on the style of his play, where he is less reactive trying to make the changes, and he wants them, and meaning that he doesn't want to change his formations up. So when you mentioned the 4-1-4-1 or the, you know, the formations you were mentioning earlier,
4-2-3-1,
the 4-2-3-1, 3-4-2-1, whatever whatever you're looking at, he's less likely to change that in a similar context to what Ralph was. So all in all, what are we looking for? What are we hoping for? Well, I feel like in an opinion basis that he's going to do very well at a lower level in terms of championship. And so I think he punches above his weight wherever he's been. And so with his first job at MK Dons, he 37.5% win percentage with Swansea, 36.36% win percentage. So you're averaging out there to be pushing for playoffs at a team that probably didn't have the talent to be able to get that, you know, as a middle or lower tier team. So I think he elevates the group that he has. And so, you know, if his ceiling is to get 1.36 points per game on average, you know, you're looking at 66, 67, 68. He needs to elevate that and bring us to the next level, because last year to make the playoffs, you had to be 70 points to get there. So if he can take our team and, you know, build out from the strengths that we currently do have, find and tinker with the squad to make his possession style game fitting for what we have. I think we're looking in for a very positive opportunity to quickly go back up, because when we talk about we're excited to be in the championship, I think we're excited to be in the championship for 1 year, and then we want to get ourselves back up. Because the more we sit down in the championship, the more we're gonna think, you know what, this isn't for us. It's just a slog. It's just a grind. It's a battle of attrition. It's the battle of the sun, except just, you know, 46 games in the season, and we don't want that.
You'd like to think that Russell Martin's making a step up in his career as well. He doesn't want to be staying in the championship forever. If he wants to make a name for himself, he wants to be playing in that Premier League. So yeah, one season with Saints in the championship and hopefully push him up. T Bizzle has just been saying about he's punching above his weight. I think that's right. I think he has taken Swansea as far as he possibly could with the money and the resources that I had. But one thing Sport Republic have said that we've got is money. So if we're giving Russell Martin a little bit more cash than Swansea had, surely, I know, even with the players leaving, then surely we must be able to give it a bloody good go in the championship.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, until we see who's staying and who's going, I mean, I think there's a couple names we know are probably going to go. I think Lavia will go, and I think, unfortunately, Ward-Prowse will go as well. But if they hold on to some of these good young attacking players like Alcaraz, they keep Sulemana. What are they going to do with Che Adams? Like, obviously, I think Che Adams in the championship is going to be a goal scorer. So if they can fill those two spots in the midfield with proven, say, championship players that he's comfortable with, and it sounds like kind of that's the direction they're going in, then I don't think there's any reason we can't bounce right back up. I mean, I think it just really depends on what that roster looks like, 6 weeks from now, when they're opening play. And if they do have a lot of turnover, again, I think that's where the need is going to be for us to be a little bit patient with how he wants to play. But I agree. I mean, I don't think there's any reason to think we can't be at least the top four team in the championship. And I think anything less than that would be really honestly disappointing. Burnley was a terrible team in the Premier League the year they got relegated. And
lost their manager, lost their players, and they bounced straight back up with ease.
Yeah, right. And they were almost unbeatable in the championship last year. So there's no reason if we keep, obviously the heart and soul of the roster is James Ward-Prowse, and I don't think he'll be there. But if you keep the bulk of that roster together with players that have already proven, to be goal scorers, even Adam Armstrong, who – again, it's been disappointing, but there's no reason to think he can't score in the championship. He's already done that. So guys like that sure, I think will really perform well. And by the way, it sounds, at least from what I'm reading, that Burnley doesn't want to pay for Nathan Teller. And if they don't, I'm happy to have him back, right? So
yeah,
he's just another option.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're going to emulate what Burnley did last season, a big part of that was Nathan Teller. So if we can get that and get him his goal-scoring form, then fine, we'll have him. Like I've said many times before, if Burnley want him, they've got to pay for him. If they don't pay for him, then Saints don't need to sell him. He's under contract, so, keep hold of him.
So I think that's a great point, right? It may not be this offseason how much money we're willing to spend as much as how much money we're willing to turn down, right? If we stand pat and say, look, this is what Teller is worth to us. If you don't want to pay that, fine. In some ways, it's not what you spend. It's what you're willing to kind of turn down. In terms of making money. And so if people aren't willing to meet our price on certain players, and if Sport Republic is willing to stand pat with those guys, I think we'll bounce right back up.
Good. Yeah, we can all hope. Another big thing that happened in the week is the fixtures. They're finally out. And we open up on the road to Hillsborough to face Sheffield Wednesday, newly promoted Sheffield Wednesday. And our first home game will be Norwich. So I'll run through that first month of August for you. So we've got Sheffield Wednesday, of course, on the 4th away. On the 12th, we've got Norwich at home. On the 19th, we've got Plymouth away. And on the 26th, we've got QPR at home. Obviously, there's a Carabao Cup tie in there. But more on that in a bit. Any fixtures you're excited about, Tim?
Not specifically. I mean, I don't know a lot of the championship teams because, I've basically become a Saints fan since they've been in the Premier League. What I'm looking at is more like the arc of the season. I'm kind of willing to give them a little bit of breathing room in August and September, but hopefully I look at that group of games in October and think like that's where we need to be hitting our stride. You know, if you want to finish, you know, in a good position, either to finish first or second, or to be in that playoff, I think that's where they really need to turn the corner. So, obviously, I think a lot of people will have their eye on that Boxing Day game, you know, for obvious reasons with our manager. But hopefully by then, that's kind of put to bed by the way he's been performing at Southampton. And you know, even that's just kind of almost like a footnote at that point. It's more like the grouping of games. Like I think we want to be picking up points, certainly by October, to be moving in the right direction and being in the, say, top five by then, or by the end of October, to be in a position where you can see them push on and maybe finish first or second and avoid that playoff.
Yeah, definitely want to avoid the playoffs. I don't think I can handle that. But T-Biz, you can now plan your return back to the UK again. And based on these fixtures, what are you thinking about?
We need to hit the ground running in August, because in September and then the games leading up to, like, basically our September and then our run into the end of the season are just an absolute gauntlet. So looking at September, right, you've got Sunderland away, Leicester home, Ipswich home, Middlesbrough away, Leeds home. That's all in September. That scares me very much so. Whereas then also leading into the end of the season, and more specifically leading right in that April time, that late March, early April, you've got, once again, Sunderland home, Leicester away, Middlesbrough home, Ipswich at home, or Ipswich away, Blackburn away, Coventry home, Watford home, and then you get Leeds to finish out away at the end of the season. Those are a run of games that just could absolutely destroy us if we cannot find our footing. And so hopefully we've got the first few games ahead of us, where you've got Wednesday, you got Wednesday, you got Gillingham in the Cup, you got Norwich at home, which, you know, it's a play team you got to play with, and they could beat you any day. And then you got Plymouth Argyle away and QPR at home in August. So to me, I think that's really the foundation. And Russell's got to start off and be really well. And, you know, your October, November, December, like I said, it's a total slog. But that September and then the run into the end of the season scares me a lot.
Yeah, and obviously just extending on that a little bit more. But we've got, Boxing Day, we've got Swansea, you've got New Year's Day, you've got Norwich away. The last home game, Stoke, on the 27th of April. And the last day, a trip to Elland Road. I mean, could that decide who gets promoted? I don't know. I always look at the last day just to think, obviously, last year we had Liverpool, and it was like, oh, my God, if we need to beat Liverpool to stay up, then we're in trouble. But obviously, it wasn't that we were already down by then. But, yeah, and another thing I was chatting to Stu about last week was Russell Martin having to turn St. Mary's into a fun place again, because, you know, it hasn't been for some time. That loving feeling seems to have gone. He has to get the fans on side from the off. And like you were just saying, Tim, like if you take a look at the first group of home fixtures, you've got Norwich and, you know, QPR. I know they struggled a little bit last season, but that kind of needs to be a win, because then you've got Leicester and you've got Leeds in there. It is going to be a tough first couple of months, especially at home.
It's a team that needs to learn how to win again. I mean, if you look at the last two seasons in the Premier League, they won 15 games out of 76.
Ouch.
Right? So it's a team that really needs to learn how to win again, which is why I'm willing to be a little bit patient early. But, you know, there's a lot of battle scars on these players, and
especially
they just kind of need. Yeah, right.
I remember.
I mean, whether they go up a goal, down a goal, it just never seems like they're going to win, at least over the last couple of seasons. And I would argue that 15 out of 76 was even worse, because some of those wins came in a very brief period, kind of at the beginning of last season, you know, not the most recent season, the one before. We were dreadful down the stretch. So if you look at what we did the last, say, 8 to 10 games of the season before, and then we only won 6 games this year. I mean, probably won 6 out of the last, 45 games?
Something
like that. It's
awful, isn't it? Yeah, he's got a big job to do straight away. He really does. And as Tim mentioned as well, Carabao Cup round one, that was drawn also on Thursday. And we got League Two's Gillingham. Can't lose to another League Two team, surely. I know it's not the FA Cup, but still, we want to be winning those games. And there's been a new sponsor for the shirt. Draper Tools is back, which is lovely. I mean, it's going to be on the back of the shirt under the numbers. So, yeah, that's a nice touch to the fans. I mean, the first Saints shirt I ever bought was what, 1992, and it had Draper Tools on the front. So yeah, it's nice, it's good. And there's some news from the women as well. Lucia Kendall and Kayla Rendo have signed new deals, keeping them here until 2025. We've had 20-year-old B team goalkeeper Ollie Wright. He's penned a new 2-year deal, keeping him here until 2025 also. But he's immediately been sent out on loan to National League Southside Bath for the whole of the 23-24 season. And whilst we're on the Bees, they've announced their pre-season fixtures. They start with a trip to Oxford behind closed doors on the 15th of July, followed by a home game against Leighton Orient on the 22nd of July. They're away to Weymouth on the 25th, Torquay on the 29th, and finally Swansea under-21s in August. And some transfer news. We have got some news to talk about. I don't know if you've seen this, Tim, but one outgoing confirmed, Dan and Lindeloo has made a switch to Bolton permanent. He spent the second half of the season on loan there. Any feelings towards Dan and Lindeloo leaving on a permanent?
No, I mean, I didn't see him coming back in the squad. So, you know, not really surprising there. I mean, he played a little bit under Ralph. And I thought he looked okay at times, but I don't know that we're, you know, I think we need to turn the page on some of these players, and we do need to thin the roster out. So no,
absolutely.
No,
yeah. I've got no gripe with that as well. I mean, when he went on loan the first time, it was like, okay, yeah, it's fine. He's not going to get the games that he needs. He's still young. But he came back and he went back on loan again. I think he's been to Cheltenham. He's been to Lincoln. They sent him back and then he went to Bolton. And it was like, if he's not going to make it or get a chance in this team, then what are we doing here? You know, he needs to, if he wants to be playing, he feels like he can be playing every week, then yeah, then a permanent switch is probably on the cards. He was never going to be a Premier League striker, in my opinion. Whether or not he could have made a decent impact in the Championship, I don't know. But I mean, best of luck to him. Hopefully he can get some game time at Bolton. And yeah.
I hope it goes great for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul Onuachu, apparently Borussia Mönchengladbach are preparing an offer for him, which is, I don't know, I'm sat here rubbing my hands together right now because I really, really do hope we can get some money back for him.
Yeah, so I'm kind of surprised because I would think the profile of Tall Paul isn't something or someone that would go to BMG. I think that, you know, if he was one of the top players in the Belgian league and just, you know, destroying them, he'd be better suited at a team. And I don't know if I feel like Germany isn't the best route for him. That's not to say, you know, good luck if he wants to leave and he wasn't a good fit. Yeah. I think he could, you know, he could do numbers in the Championship. Do I want him here? I mean, there's the battle of let's keep everybody and see what sticks versus let's sell out the people that don't, that we don't care about and we need the money and
this bloated squad down as well, don't we? We don't care about that around.
You play the Football Manager game where you're like, well, I need to sell to buy and, you know, get the players in. Because if he's going to if Russell's going to want Joe Perreault or Matt Grimes, Swansea is not going to want to bite and try and sell them to us because they already pissed off at us for grabbing him and waiting for that long.
It doesn't seem like he's going to be a fit for what Russell Martin wants to do. And I do think they need to, like I said, lean out the squad a little bit. So it didn't work. I mean, honestly, one of the first games he played against Chelsea, I thought he played okay. Like he was getting his head on the ball. He would knock it down in the box for other guys, but it just never clicked. And he does look a bit lumbering and just maybe not quick enough, at least for the Premier League. Now how he would be in the Championship, I don't know, but I would be surprised if he's on the roster. You know, when we get into the, you know, we get past the transfer window, unless they just can't find a place for him to go.
Well, he seems quite well liked in Europe for some reason. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of clubs that are interested in him in Europe all the time. But again, we don't know how Russell Martin feels about him. He might really like him.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with whatever works. I don't think we can blame him or make it seem like he did anything wrong. I just don't think he fit what we were trying to do at the time. And, you know, it just didn't work for whatever reason.
Well, it's because Ruben Sayers didn't like playing strikers, so obviously he didn't fit because we don't have any.
Because he's a striker.
Exactly, yeah. Lianco wanted by a number of clubs as well. There's a couple of clubs in his homeland of Brazil that are interested, but now Beşiktaş have also shown some interest in him. Tim, do you really, really want to see him leave? Do we want to keep hold of Lianco?
I think, I mean, it depends on what they do with the other centre-backs. I like him. And I think he'd probably be pretty good in the championship. But is he someone that I think they want to start every single game in the championship? Like, is he going to be a regular pairing? I don't know. But he is really good squad depth, and you feel like if you have to plug him in there, he'll do the job. But again, coming back to like where they are as a roster, they have to start thinning out this roster. They, you know, whether it's him or Chaleta Czar, or I think Salisu and Bella Kopchow won't be back. So what they're going to do, I think, at center back, I know you guys talked about it last week on the podcast. I think that's really the biggest question for me, because I think they're definitely going to replace their midfield. I think we know that. But what they decide to do, who they decide to keep at center back, I think is really the biggest question, because we give up the weirdest goals. Like, you know, like the most simple, like it's hard to watch sometimes. And I'm not sure that flushing all of them wouldn't be a bad idea. But if we're going to get Stevens back, I'm okay with you know, saying goodbye to the big Brazilian. So it just kind of depends on how they want to set up back there.
Yeah, I want to keep him for squad depth, and because I love him. I think he's a really lovable character.
I like him too.
He is a little bit of a cannonball at times, but still. I can't wait to see him in the championship, if I'm being completely honest.
I feel like every team needs to have a shit starter, someone who's going to go in there and ready to just fight. And I mean, just physically looking at the guy, he's that type of guy.
Fits the championship, doesn't he?
He is the championship player.
Yeah.
I would love, you know, him, and I want to see him go up against Lyndon Dykes.
Yes.
And just to see the tattoo, you know, the balding tattoo matchup, just anger and aggression, that would just be fun. But I would love, I think he'd be great. I also think because he's Brazilian, and therefore he has probably better possession skills than any of our other center backs that are currently on our roster, I think he'd be a good fit. I think that's because with the ability to keep possession, Lianco can do that. And, you know, that's not what Ben Nurek's known for. It's not what Stevens, he kind of has, you know, ball playing skills. But I think Lianco would be a great fit in Martin's team. And I don't think, I would not like to lose him.
No, I don't. I want to keep hold of him. And I say he's attracting some interest all over the place. Another player who's attracting interest, obviously, is James Ward-Prowse. We know this. There's news going around that he is supposedly keen on a move to Fulham. Tim, I don't mean any disrespect to Fulham here, but I think maybe he should be doing a little bit better than that. I mean, surely West Ham would be a better destination for him. You know, the lure of European football. Well, obviously, Declan Rice is on his way out. I think that would be a good replacement at West Ham. But Fulham, I don't know, if a few eyebrows raised there.
I agree 100%. I do think West Ham would be a better fit for him. But I always think of this as like the silly season, so you kind of believe half of what you hear. And you know, there's sure. I think some negotiating going on in the press, and you know, they're just trying to put pressure on West Ham by throwing Fulham out there as like an idea. So I think he's definitely going to go. I hope he goes to a place where you know, he can play European football, and I think West Ham would be a good fit, any one of the, you know, the clubs that will be playing in Europe next year. And I obviously wish him well. I think he's going one way or the other. It's just really finding the best fit for him. And obviously for me, he goes with good graces, and I hope he has a wonderful season with whoever he plays for next year. But I agree with you for Fulham. I mean, they were in the championship 10 minutes ago. So, you know,
they probably could be again. You know, if they have I wouldn't put it past them to have a poor season in the Premier League and then go straight back down.
100%. I agree with you. Since we came up in 13, West Ham came up with us. The only teams in the Premier League that have not been relegated since then are the Big Six and Everton.
Yep.
Crystal Palace came up the year after us. So if you're not like an England, London-based team, or from Manchester or Liverpool, your odds of staying up over the course of time are not great. And so I know Fulham is in London, but they're certainly not one of the Premier League teams, you know, the premier teams in London.
No,
I just think they're on that yo-yo with everyone else.
News of an incoming 19-year-old right back and former Chelsea player, Derek Abou. He's supposedly an attack-minded fullback and has attracted interest from the Premier League with Crystal Palace, actually. So, yeah, I want to hear from you on this one. To me, right, this is pointing at playing three at the back. with plenty of options going forward down the flanks at wing back. So if Martin wishes to play a flat back four, you know, that's fine. We've got James Bree. If he wants to play with those wing backs, we've got options in Tino and Abu. So is that how you read into that, or is that just me?
Well, is he a right back? Because I'm pretty sure he's a right back. Is that correct?
Yes, he's a right back with a lot of attacking flair, apparently.
So in that setup, you know, I wouldn't listen to his Spotify because his personality is chosen. With the S being a money sign. So.
Yeah, it's not for me, Tim. I'm not into that.
Yes. Yeah, I wanted to see, you know, the personality that matched it. So it's fun to have that type of flair and that person. But to me, I don't see this anything more than we've already got Tino Livramento. We've got James Bree. We're assuming that Walker Peters is gone. I mean, sure. You're looking at like a third choice right back right now. So to me, it means nothing. I wish him, you know, nothing, all the best, and if he can try and break in. But at Chelsea Academy players, or you know, we exchanged one in Jimmy G Morgan, and we got back chosen. So good for him.
Yeah. Well, we've got Tino as well. He's a Chelsea. Yeah. Simeon.
Yeah, I don't think anything's gonna come from it. I think it's big news.
I hope he can play left back as well, because we need left backs. As I say, Perot's gonna be on the way out, and
you think so?
I think so. And you got Larios, who's a youngster, he's been injured, and the only other one we've got there is Thierry Small. So I think they should really need to be
They should go sign Ryan Manning, though. He was by far the best Swansea player last year, according to multiple different rating locations. And him fitting in, he would just slide in right away if we're losing Perot. I mean, hell, I'd still sign him anyways, regardless. I think Larios can use a loan to, you know, Leighton Orient or, Ross County, like everybody else.
Yeah, Ross County. Okay, so, Tim. As we continue in this series now, we've been hearing from the fans their opinions on last season and why it went so horribly wrong. And I want to start with you, with Ralph. So he relieved of his duties on the 7th of November. Did that happen too late for you? Or maybe you feel we should have stayed, or perhaps, you know, maybe waited till January or whatever. But where do you stand with the Ralph situation and, like, in and out?
I don't want to be revisionist. And when they fired him, I was okay with it. I love Ralph. I think he did a great job, but I just think it was time. You know, if you looked at the end of last season, the beginning of this season, the results just weren't there. And I think maybe the players needed another voice. Having said that, I don't think they had a great plan. You know, for what seemingly seemed like an inevitable conclusion, which was that you were going to fire him, they just didn't handle what came next very well. So I'm not going to sit here and say they should have kept him on because of what happened afterwards. And at the time, I thought maybe they needed a new voice. But obviously, that's where the season kind of really crumbled, because it just seemed like over the last few years, Ralph was always able to cobble together maybe a 10-game stretch where we could get four or five wins and maybe, you know, 16, 17 points in that period that would get us up to that mid-30s, which is where we needed to be. I don't know whether he was going to be able to do that or not. I was fine with letting him go at the time, but it obviously it escalated really quickly after that. It just, you know, never came together.
Yeah, so hindsight's great, isn't it? You look back and say, well, that they should have done that. But at the time, we were all like, yeah, well most of us were like, yeah.
He definitely was the best manager we had last year. I don't think there's any question about that.
Absolutely. Obviously, looking back at what we had afterwards, then you probably would have kept him. But without knowing that knowledge, do you think the timing was right to get rid of him? Or do you think maybe they should have got rid of him in the summer?
I mean, looking back, again, maybe they probably should have done it in the summer, because I don't think they were all in agreement that he should be there, just based on kind of what I've read in terms of how that played out. But if they were just going to hire Nathan Jones in the summer, I'm not sure that would have changed anything either, other than, you know, you know, they would have fired Jones earlier probably than they fired Ralph. So maybe in the summer they had more choices in terms of who they could have brought in. And maybe that was the play then, if you were going to, you know, have a quick trigger with him. Certainly there's more options in the summer in terms of managers that are willing to leave their teams. So if you could make an argument that they should have done it sooner or later, I would argue sooner would have been the play. But I'm not sure what would have saved us last year. We just didn't, you know, we just didn't have a team that seemed like they knew how to win games, no matter who we had managing.
Wow. I mean, Nathan Jones certainly didn't. I mean, you look at his record, as we've said, like 8 games in the Premier League, that's 7 losses and 1 win. And then obviously that one win came at Goodison Park, but I mean...
Yeah, so I don't know how Tim Bazance feels about it, but it's funny, like over here, obviously we don't have access to as much news about what's going on, but the fan reaction pretty quickly on him was so overwhelmingly negative that I just couldn't figure it out. And then, you know, you kind of by the end, you were like, oh, geez, they were totally right. This guy's overmatched. But it kind of, from the beginning, I think, you know, because you have access to the press conferences and everything else, maybe you could watch it a little bit more closely. It just was such a disaster. He just seemed in so far over his head in a way that even though Celis was losing as many games as Jones or more, he at least seemed like a grown-up, maybe is the right word I'm looking for. I don't know. It was a disaster, really bad. And again, I'm not sure. I don't think appointing Celis earlier would have saved us. Maybe if they would have gotten in a guy who's known to keep people up earlier, maybe
Sam
that would
Allardyce.
Have helped.
But,
yeah,
Sean Dyche,
you know,
the usual suspects.
Maybe Dyche would have kept us up. I mean, he certainly did that for Everton, but I don't know. You know, maybe going down is what we really needed for a reset.
Okay, well, in the period between, well, I say the period between, it wasn't a lot, it was only like a day between Ralph Arsenault and Nathan Jones. Say we did get Jesse Marsh to come in then, would we have stayed up then?
I think we may have, only because I think
because
there's
you're
teams,
American
other teams
biased.
At the bottom. No, no, not at all. When you say it, Jesse Marsh or whoever, if you'd have gotten a real manager, someone who was proven, I think we could have stayed up in the same way. Like, I don't think Everton was any better than us. But they had the right guy in there with enough know-how to get the results that they needed down the stretch to stay up. It's more for me. It's more of a comment on the other teams that were at the bottom. They all could have been had. You know, we're out there losing to Bournemouth and you know, we did well against Everton, but you know, we dropped points against those teams at the bottom that I don't think have better rosters than us. So I don't know. I mean. We couldn't have gotten worse. What did we need to stay up? 10 more points, maybe 11, something like that. So you're talking about 3 or 4 games that could have turned. And we certainly had games like, how did we lose to the Wolverhampton? Up a goal, they're down
yeah,
a man,
see,
and we somehow lose
that
game.
You can look at that whole stretch of games that Nathan Jones was appointed for, and all of those were winnable games. Okay, apart from the Liverpool one, which was his first game, you accept that. You go to Anfield.
Yeah.
You accept it. I mean, Brighton were riding high at the time as well, but to get, you know, spanked by them at home was awful. That Fulham game, that could have been a point because we let that go at the last minute. The Nottingham Forest game at home, disaster. One shot between both teams and they took the goal. Everton, okay, we won that one. The 1-0, the hard 1-0 loss to Villa, another game that we could have won. Brentford absolutely destroyed us. We were never even in that game. And that Wolverhampton game. I mean, you just turn around 3 of those games and we probably would have had enough to stay up. And that was all in the Nathan Jones era. I say era, it was only 8 games. But yeah, you could argue that Ruben Saez actually had easier games. And also, his team selection was far worse than Nathan Jones. You could look at Nathan Jones' team selections and at least we were playing with a striker. At least he was playing players in the right position. Ruben Saez just looked completely overwhelmed with everything. And you probably could argue that Saez did a worse job than Nathan Jones. And yet he's leaving the club with our best wishes.
Yeah, I mean, you could just summarize it and say we were shit, because that's definitely what it was. But when you look at Saez, he's been there the entire year. So you would think, this is the practical application after getting rid of Jones and getting rid of Ralph, is he at least can right the ship and not make us look worse than we already are. But it somehow was, we just had a nice person to talk to in the media, but our team was still shit and playing like shit. So where Nathan Jones was a complete train wreck and he's basically the crazy uncle in this whole situation. You know, you're right. He did try. But to me, you know, you're looking through all of this, what is, you know, what is the appropriate action? Where would have Ralph left us? I think Ralph would have probably had us right around 17th or 18th. I think hiring Nathan Jones was the worst decision in the season, because you could tell immediately that, and he seemed out of his depth basically right away. And that when we hired him, we're all like, I don't know how this is going to work out. And it was obviously terrible. But the expectations for Ruben to come in and to right the ship and do everything that's necessary, he didn't do it. And it scared. I mean, it was scary, but we just saw the Titanic. He just slowed the sink a little bit more. Compared to with Nathan Jones, the it sunk a lot faster.
Yeah, quite possibly. But yeah, this is going to be a difficult question for you. But what are the positives of the season for you?
That is tough. I think Lavia obviously is the biggest surprise. And obviously, I think moving forward, you know, if they do it properly and sell him for enough money, he's the one that will pay dividends, I think, the longest, because, you know, we paid such a small fee for him, and it looks like we can get some good money back if they spend that wisely. He was a joy to watch. I will continue to follow him as a fan, no matter where he goes. I just thought he was a delight to watch play. And the other guy is Alcaraz for me, who I think came in with a lot less fanfare than a lot of those players in January. But boy, he's a really good player. I mean, he just understands where he needs to be. He seems to pop up in great spaces and is very clever. He's quick. And I'm hoping that, you know, we have the wherewithal financially to just say no to everyone and let him play another year here, because he was the most fun player to watch this season for Southampton. And I wish we would have just signed him a little bit sooner and had him all season long.
Yeah, you just forget that he was only here in January, and he's already come in leaps and bounds. Yeah, like you said, it's that timing for me, the timing of his runs. He just always seems to be in the right place, and banging four goals as well.
And honestly, for his development, I think it's a good opportunity. I think for him, I think his best decision would be to stay. I would hate to see him go somewhere like Brighton and end up playing half the games, or, you know, coming not starting as much, or not getting as much game time. So selfishly, I obviously want him to stay, because I think he'd be a key part of getting us back up. But I also think from a development standpoint, it would be good to him, because he's going to play. I think he's only, 21 or 22. I think that's really what he needs.
Right. Okay. So we've got some questions. These six questions that we ask every single one. So yeah, six questions. The first one, if Ralph had still been in charge, would we still be in the Premier League?
Yes, but that's more a comment for me on the rest of the teams that were at the bottom than it is about who we were. So I'll say yes, but it's a tentative one. It would have been close.
It's literally a coin flip. I would say it's 50-50, and that would mean between 17th and 18th place. I think that we could have squeezed out enough points and made a few runs like he has historically done, in a couple months where he just absolutely, we look just completely top notch. And I think there's obviously the downturn, he would have been able to write things up 50-50. And I'm going to flip a coin right now, literally right here, heads, and nope, we got relegated.
So you make a great point. I think the only difference between this year and the previous 2 years really was that one stretch he would give us, where we would get, you know, 5 wins in 10 games, and that was the difference between us staying up. You know, could he have done that, you know, one additional time and you know, maybe that stretch of games after the World Cup? It's a 50-50 deal, and we just weren't good enough.
I think it was a brave decision from Sport Republic, but I think ultimately, I think they made the right one in sacking him, because I always go back to that 2021-22 season. The end of that was just so bad. And that was under Ralph, and it wasn't, nothing was changing. So we stayed up by the skin of our teeth, really. He had the whole summer to do something. The window was pathetic, didn't sign the striker that we needed, whether that's not on Ralph, by the way. But the start of the season was just, it wasn't good enough. And I know that his last game was that 4-0 loss to Newcastle at home. I just don't think he would have done enough to turn it around. So I do think, sad fact is, I think that we would have got relegated with any three of them in charge. I just don't think we were good enough for it. Second question, who's your player of the season?
For me, it's it's got to be James Ward-Prowse. I mean, when you look at I love Lavia. I think he was amazing, but he only played, I think, 26 games. Ward-Prowse played all but 47 minutes, which I think were the 2 minutes he was out in the last game, and then he got sick against, was it Bournemouth, that he came out. So
that's right.
Just the heart and soul of the team. You know, I'm going to really miss him. So I have to give him Player of the Year. I just think without him, I'm not sure we would have had 20 points.
Yeah, Ward-Prowse. The reason is people were going to say Alcaraz and Lavia, but I overall, no, it makes sense for. I think my opinion on player of the season is that you play the entire season, and like an MVP. I mean,
he was first on the team sheet if he wasn't injured. I mean, if he was fit, which beyond his control, then I'm pretty sure he would have played.
He also had the most goals and the most assists. So, I mean, I don't think it should be a controversial thing. He was our best player.
That is true. But also, you know, he gets those goals and those assists for Saints, but Gareth Southgate still didn't look at him for England. 19-year-old Romeo Lavia got into that Belgian team this season as well, and he was playing for a team that got relegated. How do you do that?
Lavia doesn't play a position that goals and assists really truly matter.
No.
But to me, when you have the player of the season, it's literally the most impact you were able to make over the entire season. So for the impact that Lavia was able to make based on his position and the amount of time that he has, yes, it was a higher percentage. And yes, he was in the best player out of everybody in terms of percentage of when he was there. But because Ward-Prowse played for, you know, 10 weeks more worth of games, then he's the winner for me.
Okay. It's a good problem. Tim, your goal of the season?
This one, because I didn't give him player of the season, this is Lavia against Chelsea, which was just rocket. And really kind of at that early part of the season kind of announced who he was. And I know like goals are not really his thing, but it just demonstrated his quality and just a beautiful goal. And I was only looking at goals in games we won. Because certainly we had some great goals in there, so it kind of narrowed the field. But I just thought it was what a moment that was, and that was easy for me.
Yeah, I went for the Gineppo against Man City, the chip in the cup. Yep. That was amazing for me. I'm still in shock.
I am going with the Adams scissor kick against Leicester. Now. Yeah. I think in terms of difficulty, everything that Ward-Prowse is able to do, yes, those are probably the goals. And like I said, in terms of difficulty, but to me, we clawed back to win. It was a beautiful assist leading to an even better goal, and it won us the game. So yeah. To me, in context of what the goal meant, the level of difficulty necessary, and overall what it just was, that's my favorite.
So it's excellent. Interesting you picked that one, because I was looking at the goals, you know, just kind of finding my favorite. His first goal in that game is an underappreciated goal, because if you remember, it was off a play off the corner where Bela Kopcha knocked it down for him, and they scored. And like, it seemed like they actually had a plan.
Yes,
on a set piece. That I don't know. I watched that goal and thought, wow, like it looked like they actually tried to do that in a way that. A lot of times when they're doing set pieces, you're like, well, I don't, other than when Ward-Prowse is going for a goal, they just never seem to do much. And that was, to me, an underappreciated goal. But the second goal by Adams was amazing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Game of the season.
Easy one for me. I was only at one game and they won. So,
of course,
so that was it. Leicester, great goal by Alcaraz that happened kind of right in front of where we were sitting. Just had an amazing time. And, you know, at that time, you felt like it might be something that they could build on, which obviously didn't happen. But it was their last win of the season. And, easy for me. It was that game.
Perfect. Tim?
Everton win 2-1. Coming back makes a huge difference. Those are the team games that are what it's all about.
Yeah, I think I voted that one as well. I think that was my favorite. Tim, biggest failure of the season. So we know that... You know, it could have started with Ralph, you know, being in too long or too late. The summer window that Sport Republic did, or even the January window, the appointment of Nathan Jones itself, the continuation of Ruben Saez. There's been a lot of problems, that, you know, why we failed this season. But in your opinion, what is the biggest failure of this season?
In general, I'll say decision making by Sport Republic. But more specifically, I mean, I think hiring Nathan Jones was it. Because once you do that, it's the trickle down effect. But then once you fire him, you're left with Sellers for the rest of the season. I think they just, if they were going to fire Ralph, they needed a better plan. And hiring Nathan Jones, that was it. I mean, we had a period there with the World Cup break where you felt like they could turn it around, but they didn't have the right person in charge. And after that, we just had no chance.
Yeah, I think you're going to echo that as well, aren't you, Tim?
Nathan Jones, he is, you make the decision to fire Ralph. I get it. I understand it. It makes all the sense. So appointing him and his quality of managerial skills combined are the worst thing of the 2022-23 season.
Right. Now, this last one I'm going to enjoy because I'm making a record of all the people that have come on, and I'm going to remind you at the end of the season what you said. And I know Tim Bazance has got a very, very good record in predicting things, actually. I went and had a listen to our predictions at the start of last season, and Tim was pretty much spot on with his assessment, and I know he's probably going to be close to it here. So when Tim says a prediction, usually we pay attention. So I'll start with you, Tim. Where do Saints finish in the championship?
Because we never do anything easy, I'll say we finish third and make it to Wembley. And from there, it's a coin flip on whether we go up.
Do you want to flip that coin now? Okay, you're going third now. That's a position that two other people have said as well. So you've got Alex Haas has done that, and Dan Fox has said that as well. So now you're in there as well, Tim. So third, which I will take.
And it's a little early to say, because I think it does depend on what they do. You know, who stays, who goes. But we should have enough to be in the top five for sure. But yeah, we never do anything easy, so I can't predict a first or second.
It's going to be an enjoyable season, but it's just going to be a little bit too much too late, I think, and I think we'll just miss out next year when we'll make a jump. Right, I'm looking forward to this one. T. Bizzle, where are Saints finishing next year?
Looking at everything, easy thing, and I would say my almost true guarantee prediction is that we're not going to finish in the bottom half of the league. So. And I know one of your previous guests here on the podcast was able to say first, and we were going to win by like with over 100 points, and we are not going to do that. So what is the percentage? What is, you know, the likelihood of what we're at? So let's take Russell Martin's history at 1.36 points per game, throw him the necessary tools to be successful, build in a room for error. What that means is I think they will finish, and I would, if I had to take a gut, it was actually going to be below the playoffs, but I'm going to take fifth place this season, for this season. And I really couldn't tell you the playoffs, but I think that we definitely will have the fight and the ability to do it. And you know what? Fuck it. Let's just say we're going to get promoted again.
Okay. I like that. All right. Tim, do you know what? I'm going to put a bet on that fifth. Because you got it right last year, and I should have taken it then. So I'm going to go and put some money on Saints to finish fifth, and see what happens.
Tim actually has statistics to back his things up, where I'm just throwing darts at the dartboard.
Yeah, well, that's usually what I do every week as well. I just like, wow, Saints are going to. I've just got like 1-1, 1-0, 2-1, 2-0, and then just randomly pick one. That's what Saints are going to do this week.
I really think with Martin, though, because he's been right at that mark with MK Dons and with Swansea. So take that same emphasis and give him a little bit better tools. I think that's where his statistical mean is going to be.
Yeah, you're being very, very logical here, Tim.
Yeah. Well, it's within two standard deviations, that fifth place. So it could range anywhere between second and eighth, but I'm gonna pick fifth.
And
finishing with 73 points.
I'm gonna write that down as well. Just 74. I'm gonna write that down as well, just because I might get some better odds on that as well. but yeah, you can guarantee now if I put money on it, Saints are going to finish like 15th, and it's it'll be all your fault then. But yeah, okay. Tim, thank you very much for coming on today and sparing us your time. And I really, really, really hope that you can come back over again, not just because the Saints need you, but, you know, it'd be nice to repay you for all the drinks that you bought me and have a nice meet up again, go to the Red Lion, go to another game. Yeah. And obviously bring your family along as well. And hopefully.
Yeah. Next time we come. Yeah. My youngest son is very much into soccer. He plays and he has renounced all other Premier League teams at this point. And he is a Southampton fan. Yeah. I brought him James Ward-Prowse jersey and he's all set. So next time I come, he will definitely be with us for sure.
How old is he?
He is 15.
Oh, brilliant. Perfect age.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well into
so
it. Yeah.
I will be back. I don't know if I'll be back next year, but it was a bucket list thing for me to do. And now that I've done it once, there's no way that's going to be the last time I'm there. I just had an amazing time. So I can't wait to get back.
Oh, that'd be great to see you again. And yeah, and obviously, like I said, the team needs you. So yeah.
Yeah.
T Bizzle, nice to hear from you again.
You as well. It's always good to be here and talk a little soccer ahead of, look at that, 6 weeks to kick off. Is it 6 weeks?
Is it? Oh, goodness me.
I was shocked when I saw that first date. It's like August 4th or 5th, right?
Yeah, it's an early start to the season, but it also means we've only got one game in May, though, because we only play we play Leeds away in May, and that's the only May game. So, obviously, we'll be in the FA Cup final as well, which is going to be after that. So, oh, dear.
Well, you've got 46. I mean, you've got 46 league games versus 38 league games right there.
Yeah. Our thanks to both Tims. A very, very American show this week. So, yeah, thanks again for popping on. And up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up my Southampton.
Podcast Network.